Many voices, many leaders, linking partnership and community. That's the theme for the 6th Annual Urban Summit that kicks off the 2013 Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration. It's a civil rights legacy to commemorate Dr. Martin Luther King every January. However, the challenge remains in carrying out his legacy and finding new methods of raising the bar for equality. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, the Urban Summit participants come to the KCUR studios today to narrow the focus on what is usually a larger discussion around education, economics, healthcare, racial and gender social justice, all in 1 hour. But in the upcoming hour, we tackle something very simple and at the same time pretty complex: public safety. We'll talk to Keith Brown, chair of the summit's crime committee, about that very subject, in addition to hearing from you, the citizen, on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. Good morning, Kansas City. My former church shot up. My former barbershop shot up. A former guest who sat right in front of me in this studio, steeped in a life of crime, murdered last year. I wish this was a quote from somebody else, but unfortunately, it isn't. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today's subject, crime and public safety, particularly on the East Side. That's piggybacking off a larger theme, many voices, many leaders, linking partnership and community, the theme of the 6th Annual Urban Summit that kicks off the 2013 Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration. The community-wide Urban Summit will be held Saturday, January 12th, 2013 at the Metropolitan Community College at Penn Valley, the Physical Education Building to be exact, 3201 Southwest Traffic Way in Kansas City, Missouri. Our guests are Keith Brown, chair of the Crime Committee of the Urban Summit. Mr. Brown, welcome to the show.
Welcome and thank you.
All right. Authorene Simmons, the mother of an unsolved homicide victim from 2010. Authorene, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you.
And we also have Randy Hopkins, the newly appointed deputy chief of the KCPD's Bureau of Investigations. Deputy chief, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Let's begin with Keith Brown, since you're the chair of the crime committee here. Why does this violence continue?
The violence continues because, well, first of all, this violence is an effect of other causes, issues. Now, we can debate whether it's poverty, lack of education, mental health issues, etc., as well as people, residents, neighbors, not being neighborly enough to tell, to report crime, which is different from snitching. But we have to become mandated reporters of the mayhem that continues to be perpetrated by us, on us, in our community.
Let's go to the investigatory aspect of this. Deputy Chief, when the statistics are increasingly showing more minority victims disproportionately shot down like dogs in the street, what is the community's role in investigation?
I think their primary role is, one, to remain engaged in the problem. And the problem is that when these crimes occur, they can be proactive in how we go about instilling the morals and the values and the things in the young men and women that are in these circumstances, in their environment, and try to change that and set a different atmosphere and tone so that when tempers flare or violence is on the edge of erupting, something can be done to defuse that. That's the first of all. And should that happen and when that happens, obviously come forward with information, talk to the police, understand that we have a role to maintain and try to assist the community in keeping it safe. And so when they are engaging us and giving us information that we need to further our investigations, that's critical. We can't proceed without a witness. We can't proceed without their testimony in court. So it's a long process. And so that's the first thing that comes to mind.
Authorene Simmons, tell us about your child.
My daughter was 29 years old when she was murdered. She left three children. She was putting them on the bus Tuesday morning, February 23rd. And assailant came from off the side of the house and shot her 3 times.
She wasn't involved in the streets in any kind of way. That's not an excuse.
Right.
But
No. She wasn't related to drugs, gangs. I didn't went to the clubs, but, not that I know of.
So what were your obstacles in pursuing this investigation? What did you encounter when you attempted to find out what it was that actually happened?
Well, there's no witness. No one know anything. No one seen anything. Ad hoc was very good with assisting me in any kind of way. Raytown Police has been on their job trying to solve the murder, but so far there's nothing. No one has come forward with any information.
You don't know the motive because no one has come forward. You don't know why.
I don't know why.
And without witnesses, Randy Hopkins, the police don't know why either. At times, the police department has claimed that, and this is pervasive across the country, that they're not getting community cooperation because of the stop snitching campaigns and the codes of silence and the Omerta gangster silence codes. In some of these cases, what's missing in the relationship between the police and these communities? They don't trust the cops.
I mean, that's the million-dollar question. There are a lot of things that go on, and I can only speak to my experiences here in the Kansas City area, and you're right. This issue is being experienced throughout the country. It's not unique to Kansas City. But some of the things that we've seen here is just as individuals grow up in the inner city and they have interactions with law enforcement, it may be sometimes under the worst circumstances. Either they had an exposure in their where the police were called to their home, and so from that point forward, they had a negative experience with seeing the law enforcement coming in to handle something in their home that occurred. Or it could be something that someone has told them about police, don't trust them. And so that code further instills myths based upon maybe some experiences or disreputations or things that others that they trust have told them. I think it's equally important that as we have contact with everyone in our community, that we put our best foot forward and that we make an effort to show ourselves in a way to where people do want to embrace us and they see us as their friend and as an ally as opposed to someone that they treat with a distance.
And that's really the key point here. I've even talked to violence prevention guys all over the country being involved in this community outreach and things of that nature. And even them say, man, I don't talk to the police. I don't talk. So that's the problem is definitely pervasive. Speaking of which, we had Aim for Peace and a couple other community organizations locally here appear on the show. What role, Keith Brown, do the different violence prevention organizations play in this ongoing challenge of violence prevention and subsequent reduction of the killings?
Well, you have a lot of programs.
A lot of programs.
Yeah, a lot of programs. We have to make sure, though, that there are measurable results and that the outcomes are measurable and that we can touch and feel the impact. And so in their stated missions and goals, it's to either prevent or reduce violent crime. But here's what has happened. Citizens, we have accepted a culture of violence. Regardless of my relationship with any police department. But I have a responsibility as a human being, as a neighbor, as one who is responsible for protecting the beloved community. And so, if we're going to get a handle on combating, diminishing and reducing this prevention, intervention, then as a neighbor, as a human being, I'm going to have to rise up and say enough is enough. I can't accept it. And so that's the mindset that we're going to have as neighbors.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. It's the Urban Summit time this year. Once again, we've narrowed our focus in this particular live show to focus on violent crime. Many voices, many leaders, linking partnership and community is the theme of the 6th Annual Urban Summit. It takes place this Saturday at Penn Valley Community College. Keith Brown, chair of the Crime Committee on Urban Summit, Authorine Simmons, who's lost her 29-year-old daughter to senseless violence, and Randy Hopkins, the newly appointed deputy chief of the KCPD's Bureau of Investigations, are all here in the studio live talking about this very difficult subject to talk about. Kansas City, what is your solution for stemming the tide of violence in the metro? Do you have questions for our panel of law enforcement professionals and community organizers? Do you have a solution? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option. And over on Twitter, we're at KCURCST. You know, Authorine, we have people calling in. We have people talking about solutions. We have people carrying picket signs. We have people marching. You're on a talk show. We love to talk, don't we?
We do.
Everyone's talking. What's the conversation? And I'll come to you in a minute, Keith. What's your conversation going beyond Saturday, beyond the summits and the conferences and the meetings and the marches? What do you want to say?
I want to say stop thinking that you're snitching when you are a witness.
Right. Right.
There's nothing wrong with protecting the community, your family, your country. You're not a snitch. You're a witness.
What have you noticed in the culture of violence or investigations or any changes, if any, since your daughter was murdered?
There haven't been much change. No one is talking. Anyone that's witness is a snitch if you step up to say something. There's no change.
Keith Brown, and I'm going to come to the deputy chief in just a second here. Have there been any initiatives in the past that have actually worked but tapered off because of politics or tapered off because of political will or organization infighting? Has there been anything that's actually worked?
I think that if efforts have tapered off, it is because that the community has lost its will to stand up, to be counted, to become engaged. Now, what we have to do beyond the summit, we have to try to affect public policy. What is the public policy going to be in our community with elected officials involved when it comes to dealing with the causes of violence? We have this state has gutted its mental health departments, and so individuals who may have, you know, mental health issues that would compel them to commit violent aggression and acts, well, where's help for them? What is our public policy on the accessibility of guns in this community? We're not talking about abandoning and going contrary to the Second Amendment, but what we are saying is that those persons who can illegally gather guns, you know, powerful guns and weapons, how are they doing that? And why are we not, you know, raising this issue to the degree that something is done? And so what is the public policy going to be?
And let's talk about that public policy and the law enforcement angle of that public policy as a sort of judicial and enforcement branch of Kansas City. I've always wondered growing up, why do these brothers have Russian AKs and Israeli Uzis posing in the picture like it's a movie poster? How did that get here? Talk about that.
Sure. Well, first let me say answer part of the first question that you asked about what's working well. And
okay.
as it relates to the community, there are, I don't want to paint a picture that there are serious, only serious problems and gaps in our communication with the community. Those things do exist, but there are also a plethora of organizations in our community that work very well with us, very close, our neighborhood associations, community groups, community meetings, all those groups are intact and very engaged and very involved in our community, and we get a lot of support from them and a lot of exchange of great information and crime information, and problems are solved in those settings. So there are a lot of things that are working in that respect. And moving beyond back to what we were talking about here as it relates to the violent side of it and our strategies or policies for the police department, I can think of every unit that's assigned to my bureau, whether it's the homicide, the robbery, the sex crimes, the vice unit, the narcotics and vice sections, or illegal gun squad. Each one of those sections have a mission set that's unique to the problems that we're discussing. And each one of those problems are associated with some of the society issues that we see that lead to the guns that we're referencing, where they're obtaining them and they're taking photos and posing with them. You know, that's the gun control part of it is a bigger issue.
And a whole other show.
That's a whole nother, yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. But we do have several initiatives in every one of our respective units that are charged with those responsibilities to deal with those unique problems. And we collaborate internally to see how we can better improve upon that and communicate within ourselves, amongst ourselves, so that we're putting forward the best product as well as trying to get ahead of this violent curve.
We're talking about violence prevention and public safety here on Central Standard today as part of a larger discussion of the Urban Summit occurring this Saturday at Penn Valley Community College. Kobe on Facebook writes, I would like to know what they think about getting out in the community and interacting on a personable level. He says he lives near Truce and see the police roaming the streets in their interceptors, but never physically interacting with people unless there's an incident that requires it. What are the programs in place to promote the well-being of people rather than the suppression and containment of crime? And going off what Kobe says, let's talk about the snitching culture for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Where does it come from?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, I'm open to hearing from the community in terms of what their issues are, why they're not coming forward, because they can best answer that better than I can.
But you aren't always a cop, bro.
Well, since I turned 21, I was. But even then, and that goes back to my original point. As I grew up as a young child, I always wanted to be a police officer, and that was because of my environment. It was because of the people that I was around. I grew up in the inner city, so it wasn't, you know, like it was in suburbs or anywhere else. I grew up in the inner city, and so my experiences were of such that I just wanted to be a police officer, and I always have been. Always wanted to do that. As it relates to officers getting out of their cars and engaging, you know, I won't make give a lot of different reasons as to why that doesn't happen. A lot of times they're just responding to calls, and so we're understaffed, and so they're responding back and forth to the 911 calls and trying to resolve those. But we do have a lot of initiatives where our police athletic league, they're engaging with the youth, and that's a very productive initiative that is sponsored by the police department and a board that they've structured to oversee that. So we're trying to do the best we can, but we can't be all things because our primary mission is to fight crime.
Right. And you're in the investigations unit, so community policing is not necessarily your purview or primary purview. But is there anything you think could be done differently, even from your vantage point in the investigations unit?
Sure, absolutely. I think community policing traditionally was kind of focused on the patrol tactic side of it. But being in investigations, there's also a side that I think goes well with alongside that same philosophy. And that's something that investigation we're looking at. When we go out to our crime scenes and when we engage with the family members of those who were victims of crimes, it's about our approach. It's about how we show that, one, that we care about them and their family, and also in how we engage with those that we come in contact with.
Keith Brown, other than Alvin Brooks and Mayor Sly James, who are some of the prominent figures who people don't know about who are involved in crime prevention? I think we're establishing that today with this discussion, but who are some of the other people that maybe people need to be aware of?
I think Brother Ron McMillan. Ron McMillan has been on the front line for a long time, being an advocate against violence, against violent crime. I think that Osco Bolden, Osco, he has gone through a transformational stage. He is the head of Posse, but at one time he was a gangbanger. But he has transformed his thinking and his actions in a very positive way, working with ex-gang members, interfacing with gang members, you know, trying to instill within them, hey, it's a better way to go. And so you have others that probably don't get the public, quote unquote, recognition. But again, what we have to do is be willing to engage these youngsters. See, I'm at a K through 8 school, and what we do with our children, we have police officers that come up, that mentor these kids, that interface with them. We have lawyers. We have doctors. We do a survey of our children. What is it that you want to be when you grow up? Then we identify those professionals that look just like them and create that interfacing. And so they can know, if I'm going to achieve this particular goal objective, then this is what must be done now. And so if we have that type of coalescing and interaction and mentoring with our youngsters, by those that look like them who are successful, then we can do a lot of prevention.
Authorine Simmons, coming back to you, a lot of times in the media, the stakeholders are identified as the mayor or the police chief or a crime prevention community leader. But do you feel like the parents of slain children are getting a say as stakeholders at the larger table of discussion?
I do. I feel like they're addressing us as well as they can. With so much crime going on, every day, so many unsolved. So I do.
Everybody's doing the best they can. Huh?
They're doing the best they can.
Joe in South Kansas City, Missouri, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, I was wondering if there are any programs out there that would help grandparents stand up to many times, you know, grandchildren who have the weapons in their homes and who are, you know, have antisocial behavior, and the parents just have to, the grandparents just have to, you know, take it because they don't know what to do.
Thank you, Joe. That's such a common thread and a common story in our community. Sometimes the parents ain't there, and Pop-Pop or Big Mama is left to pick up the pieces. And they're old, you know. What's going on with that?
The Local Investment Commission, LINC.
LINC.
Area code 816-889-5050. They have grandparent support groups. Give them a call. And so there are some grandparent support groups, and I would humbly, you know, urge and suggest and recommend that those grandparents who are having those type of struggles and problems with their offspring, their grandchildren, that call that number.
Speaking of links, we'll have that link up on KCUR.org later on when we have a repeat broadcast of this program. I think a very pertinent program, I think a very relevant program that will be up on podcast on KCUR.org this afternoon. No excuses that you didn't hear it, is in other words, is what I'm saying. What discussions, Keith Brown, do we have to get all the stakeholders in one room and start talking about solutions?
Well, as the Nike logo, just do it or let's do it. We just have to do it. Now, where we're planning to go after the Urban Summit, we're going to do just what you said. We're going to, we don't have the date yet, but we're going to do like a mid-conference where we want to bring together all of the stakeholders from different areas to tackle this problem, not in 90 minutes, but like a half a day. So here are some strategies, tactics, solutions, you know, that we want to, here's our resolve. And along with that, make sure that we.
You heard it from Keith Brown. Swoosh, Nike, you don't have to pay me. It's very important. Keith Brown, chair of the crime committee of the Urban Summit, Authorine Simmons, the mother of a slain homicide victim in 2010, and Randy Hopkins, the newly appointed deputy chief of the KCPD's Bureau of Investigations, is here in the studio on Central Standard today. It's break time. When we return, more violence prevention talk here on Central Standard. Kansas City, what's your solution for stemming the tide of violence in the metro? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Central Standard at KCUR.org is the email address. Facebook is also an option. At KCURCST is where we're at on Twitter. Holler at us. Central Standard returns in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. We begin this segment by reading lyrics from a Kansas City rapper, Tech N9ne, a well-respected elder statesman in the local hip-hop community. He says, and I quote, "We've got 35 or more people out here now killing 20 and 30 people each. Like if I had a 38 right now, I could make you do just about anything I wanted to. Just about all my life, people have been doing that to me. Yes, but if they kill without conscience, how can they be treated? How can we recognize them before it happens again?" That's from the Tech N9ne song, Inside the Mind of a Killer. Shout out to Tech, our guest right here in the studios, Keith Brown, chair of the Crime Committee on Urban Summit, Authorine Simmons, the mother of a slain homicide victim, and Randy Hopkins, appointed deputy chief of KCPD's Bureau of Investigations. Kansas City, what's your solution to stemming the tide of violence in the metro? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or get in touch through Facebook or tweet us at KCURCST. I begin with that quote from Tech N9ne because, Keith Brown, this is a battle for the hearts and minds of a lost generation. What's the first step?
Well, when Tech N9ne asked the question, how do we get into the mind of a killer? Well, we need our mental health professionals to help answer that. We need greater interaction, engagement, involvement, faith-based, period. We need to measure and effectively evaluate programs that are working. If they're not, those programs that are not working, we leave them alone. We need to do more of a public awareness campaign on our successes, our failures, letting the public know, here's where you can go. Here are some solutions.
What about the generation gap? We talked about Tech N9ne, hip-hop culture versus the post-civil rights parents and grandparents. How does that play into it? Are we trying to understand our children, or are we just trying to raise them and shelter them?
Well, it could be a myriad of things, and it could be both. But here's the thing. You know, when we talk about the civil rights era, here is one thing, though, that is constant. During the civil rights era, everybody at that time, they didn't want to fight against Jim Crow. You had a whole lot of folk that were afraid. But who really took the mantle?
The young people did.
Hey, that's right. SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and other young folk. Because they had a mindset that, hey, this is our country too. We live here. And we are determined that we're going to get our rights. And so today, 40-plus years later, young folk, you've got to have that same attitude. We live here. We're not going to continue to allow death and degradation to take our community by storm.
And that's an interesting thing, and it's a parent-by-parent basis, so you never want to make generalizations. But are we giving that message? Are we telling our kids, step outside of the box, or are we saying, go to school so I can get you these Air Jordans?
Well, I mean, some are, some aren't. But it's a fact that we need to do more.
Authorine Simmons, you obviously raised a wonderful daughter who was in service of her children.
Correct.
When she departed this earth.
Right.
What values did you instill in your daughter?
To be the best at whatever she was. And one of the things that she was good at was being a daughter, a friend, and a mother.
Lynn in Westport, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thank you, and thanks for doing this program. I think it opens up the possibilities of what else is possible. I feel that the paradigm that needs to shift is that spirit of fear, us against them. And I think the Osco Boltons of the world need some more energy. I think we need more of that community spirit of what else is possible, what can we do? And with all due respect to, you know, our gentleman, you know, our police officer that's there, it is fighting crime. However, if we set up that paradigm of us against them in fighting crime, then what else is possible but that fight? So what happened to serve and protect? Let's get together as a community and work with the police to serve and protect each other, us as you and you as us.
Thank you very much, Lynn, for saying that. Would you like to address that? Because as a political issue, this law and order, getting tough on crime, is a very common political rhetoric and a mandate passed down through a lot of metropolitan police departments. But what about serve and protect?
Sure. Serve and protect, I mean, that's a phrase that's been coined, and it's also on a lot of different department mission sets. But the gist of it is, and I don't know if I said anything that may have gotten taken out of context, but my whole point is, enforcement is necessary. That is our goal,
right?
As law enforcement. That's definitely why we are placed in society for that specific role. But within that role, that means that we also are part of the community. We come from the community. We are the community, and we're part of the community, and we're here to protect the community. And with that, you cannot do that without first showing that you care about the community. Everyone in there has a stake in it. We have a stake in it, and we need everyone's assistance in doing that. And that's just how our approach has to be.
Let's go to Dave at 12th and Paseo. Dave, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi. Glad to talk to you. I've had a couple of interactions where I've had to report things to local law enforcement. There have been two murders within a block of my house. There's a lot of drug activity down here, and it doesn't seem like reporting or communicating with the police is effective. So I can certainly understand why people are reluctant to talk to the police, because it doesn't seem like any action is ever taken against the bad guys. And you have to live in that neighborhood. So if the police aren't going to do anything to get them off the street, the people that are doing the reporting incur quite a bit of risk talking to the police.
Right. So let me rein you in a little bit, David, and tell us about your experience, and we'll let the police defend themselves here. We have the Deputy Chief of Investigations here in the studio. So tell us a little bit about your experience and why it was such a challenge.
Well, there's a couple of guys that are selling drugs. You know, I've told the police the location they're selling drugs from. I've reported them several times. The police have sent units a couple of times, but all they do is shoo them off, and 2 or 3 days later, they'll be back in the same spot doing the same thing. It doesn't seem to me like it would take a lot of police work to do something with these guys, because you know right where they're at. I just don't understand why there's no action.
Well, let me address it before I kick it to the newly appointed Deputy Chief of the KCPD's Bureau of Investigations, Randy Hopkins. In some situations, these are very sophisticated operations. They know the patrol beats, and they shift, play the corners like a safety, watching traffic switch.
Correct.
You know? So talk about your challenge from your
sure
vantage point.
And I appreciate the caller's information. And we hear that a lot. And in terms of you'll call, you'll want some results to be almost instant. And sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. If you understand sometimes some of the structuring of an investigation as it relates around maybe some drugs or prostitutes or things, sometimes when we make arrests, they may just be arrested and then they're back out on bond. So we do have that process that we are constantly working through, our court systems and all that. As it relates to the calling and feeling as though that the information is not being handled to your satisfaction, that's something, those are the things that we want to hear about so that we know where the problems are, we know where the gaps are, and we can begin to review our processes and open that dialogue. And if this is occurring, you're correct, it should not take a long time. And again, I don't know all about the specific location, but if there's a way for him to send that information to us, we can certainly look into it from my perspective and we can get to the bottom of it. But that's what this is all about. This is the very thing and the very type of dialogue that we need and we welcome.
Yeah, you said he was at 12th and Paseo. Keith Brown, what does the community need to do beyond just say, well, I called and they didn't show up. They don't never come down here. That was my little accent. I don't know why I did that. But well, how do you?
Here's what else can happen. The gentleman that just called and other persons who might be in his shoes. Identify someone in the community, trusted confidant. You may not have that direct link into the police department, but someone else probably does. Give them a call. We have to, just like we talk about having, you know, mentoring the children, we have to have other relationships within the community. For example, many people contact me when something is going on, and either they're afraid to go directly to the police or they're afraid of repercussions from folks that they're dealing with. And so I'll do that heavy lifting, make contact with persons whom I know on the force, have that conversation, and then we get some things done.
And that's how it starts.
That's how it starts.
Authorine Simmons, what conversation should parents be having with their children and the people that are in the watchful eye of their children in the larger community? What conversations should we be having with our peers, elders, and younger folks? Take your time.
Conversation should be about respect. Respecting themselves, respecting other. Everybody have different things. You might not like what I like, or I might not like what you like, but that doesn't make it wrong where there should be a conflict.
And that's an interesting point, coming back to Keith Brown, respect. I've often heard myself from Kansas City natives who are my age and around my age, peers of mine, some younger than me, who sometimes feel that the older guard in the community seems to want them to do the work for change, but doesn't want their leadership. Can you address that?
And if that is the mindset and the attitude that exists, then you will definitely have a vacuum when it comes to healthy leadership emanating from young people. And so that has to be dealt with, because it is a retarded mindset, you know, for me as an older adult, not to want to shepherd as well as, mentor these youngsters to take my place.
And it's a fine line between telling someone, oh, slow down there, young horsey, and saying, man, you don't know what you're talking about. You ain't lived long enough. So how do we navigate that nuance?
Well, we navigate it this way. For those leaders, for those elders who are serious about developing stronger community, protecting the beloved community, then they're going to have to mentor. They're going to have to trust and, put these youngsters up, put them out there. They're going to have to do that. Lest otherwise, you're going to have that friction. And who suffers? We suffer.
Everybody.
Yeah.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM. We're streaming live right now all over the world on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. It's the Urban Summit time. Once again, this year, the 6th annual Urban Summit. We've narrowed our focus to focus on violent crime. Many voices, many leaders, linking partnership and community is the theme of the 6th annual Urban Summit that's taking place this Saturday at Penn Valley Community College. They're going to have some breakfast, I understand. Mr. Brown, tell me how the crime committee is going to set up this agenda Saturday. But first, I'd like to reach out to the community as well. Kansas City, what's your solution for stemming the tide of violence in the metro? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. So how does the crime community deploy its agenda this Saturday?
What's going to happen in the workshop? Gwendolyn Grant, the
Urban League,
president, CEO of the Urban League. She's going to present the findings of focus groups that we conducted with children, middle school age students, adults, as well as many ex-offenders. And the focus groups dealt with snitching versus reporting crime. So we're going to give those findings. Once those findings are put forth, then there will be a reaction panel. Our new deputy chief, Hopkins, he's going to be on that panel. Our prosecutor, she will be on that panel, as well as our sheriff. So they will give their response and their reaction to the findings. Then we're going to have an open-ended dialogue.
Right, open-ended. Now, how are you going to stem the tide of people stepping up out of line and saying, y'all need to get it together? I'm doing the voices again. Can't help it.
Well, you know, I mean, if they feel that, then they have that right.
And they have to get involved.
Yeah, they have to get involved. And so then after the Q&A, that portion will be over. Then we will report our findings to the larger summit when everyone, you know, comes back together within the next hour or two.
Heather in Johnson County, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, I don't live downtown, but I go downtown all the time, and I'm a jazz singer, and so I come downtown for work all the time, and I love it down there. I used to live in Westport, and I got to say that, and it's really just heart-wrenching when I hear all these stories. How can people who don't live in the city help with this problem? Is it through money or funding? Because, like I said, I don't live there. And so I don't want to be patronizing and say I have solutions when I don't. And then I have one more thing. Really quickly, when I am down there, I have a kind of a weird thought. Maybe if the police officers were required to live in different neighborhoods in the city, maybe we wouldn't have as many trouble, any problems. And I'll take my response off there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Heather, for mentioning that. In the old days, the beat cops walked the beat, ate breakfast with the citizens, had coffee, new people, kids going to school, a lot more close-knit. That is unfortunately not the reality now. Along the lines of what Heather says, at KCURCST on Twitter, Jerry on Twitter writes, one of the keys to addressing violence is following the dollar signs, he types, money, to see who profits from the status quo. What is that, the status quo? What is the status quo?
Well, the status quo is not getting anything done. That's the status quo. The status quo is not helping us. The status quo is that which we want to eliminate and put in place those measures that are going to really enhance this community. And the young lady that called, she asked the question, well, what can I do? What could others do like me? Attend the Urban Summit. Attend that summit on Saturday. We welcome you. Be a participant. And so you can see, hear, and communicate. Be a part of that. Because long distance sometimes isn't helpful. Be a part of it.
Deputy Chief Randy Hopkins, a lot of this is about race and class divisions and the perceptions among the different groups. Heather, obviously a Caucasian American, loves jazz, comes in, sings, goes back out to Johnson County, but is well-meaning and well-intentioned and wants to help. She, Keith Brown, may feel intimidated walking to the Urban Summit, coming in there. How do we have that dialogue to have a more round dialogue in the metro area about the subjects that we're afraid to address?
Well, I think you just have the conversation. To be honest with you, sometimes when you have something that can be so difficult or touchy to engage someone in a conversation about and have them be open and honest without their words being misinterpreted, sometimes you have to set the environment one where there's trust, where they can feel that they can just say what's on their mind, what's on their heart, and then that's received. And then you have an honest dialogue about what is that issue here and then see how solutions can be applied to it. The fact that she lives in Johnson County or whether it's Wyandotte or anywhere else or Lathrop Lee Summit, it doesn't really matter. This metropolitan area is impacted by crime, and the criminals have no boundaries. They go back and forth across all jurisdictional boundaries. And we in law enforcement recognize that, and we network within ourselves because we realize that. And so we've become very effective and efficient in that communication. And in the same respect, we also realize that, our community are our partners in this, and we need them because they are our eyes and ears. And so how she can get engaged, you're right, there are various events that come up. There are various organizations that are always entrenched, whether it's Urban League or Link or others, that's their mission. Get involved in one of those things that fit with your mindset, with your spirit, and what you feel fits best for you, and just get in there and get engaged.
Deputy Chief, I'm going to give you the opportunity to address the challenges that the department faces. We talked about the challenges in investigations and not having witnesses, but what are some of the other pervasive challenges that many people don't know about as far as resource allocation or as far as the command structure, as far as the mandate of the department? What are some of those challenges?
Well, I think the challenges that we face are not different from any other metropolitan area in that we always want crime to be at its lowest rate. We want to reduce or eliminate homicide. If we had one homicide, that's one too many. So we have the same goals and mindsets that the community wants and expects of us. The men and women that work on the police department, this is a calling for them. Their minds and their spirits are in this. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in this job. They'd be in some corporate job somewhere else doing something different. They love what they do, and they're very efficient and effective at it. There are a lot of things that we can always improve upon, department, community, business associates, all of those, everyone can always come together and do things a little bit different or better. But the resounding theme that I hear and have heard and always think about is, how do we build respect? What type of leadership are we bringing to the table? How do we create the atmosphere of trust? And what mechanism or vehicle do we have in place where everyone, all of the stakeholders, as Ms. Brown stated, come together collectively, regularly, to talk about these critical issues that must be discussed continuously. This can't be a one-shot stop. We have to collectively do this because this is a living, breathing issue, and it's not going to change.
Do you have the data on the zip codes where a lot of these crimes are happening? Is it a data issue? Do you allocate those resources to these highly affected zip codes?
Our patrol officers are deployed pretty much by our calls for service. That kind of dictates how we staff our patrol officers.
So it's reactive kind of?
It's reactive. It's based on historical data. And we traditionally know that our core stations have their highest calls for service, and they are staffed with the most officers as opposed to our north or southern stations.
With the Prospect substation getting set up, is that going to change? How is that going to change or reinforce or enhance your ability to police?
I don't think it'll change in the sense that it will be a detractor. If anything, what it's trying to do is to do exactly what we were talking about earlier, to get into the community so that they see us more regularly and they can just go up and knock on the door. They can do that at our stations now, but if we have a substation that's close by where they can, it's closer to a particular neighborhood, then they may be more inclined to just walk down the street and make contact.
Authorine Simmons, what are some of the other parents whom I'm sure you talk to who have also lost their dear children? What are they saying?
When a case closed, they're looking for closure. 10 years, a friend of mine, still no answer. They're looking for closure. We want to know who, why. We want to close it.
And how can you do that while also understanding the limits and frustrations that the police department also has? How do you balance that?
For myself, with prayers. For myself. And that's what I will tell any other mother or father or family.
Amen to that. Mm. Keith Brown, what are you doing in the subsequent months after the Urban Summit?
A few things. One, I will continue to work with and support the 200-plus students at Genesis Promise Academy. Because if we can save them, then they won't fall into the abyss. That's one. I will continue to work with community agents, community organizations and agencies, the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department, neighborhood organizations, etc., to try to bridge this gap that we find ourselves in. I'm going to work diligently to deal with this problem.
The Urban Summit is this Saturday, January 12, 2013, at the Metropolitan Community College Physical Education Building over there at Pin Valley. Keith Brown, chair of the Crime Committee of the Urban Summit, is our guest. Authorine Simmons, who lost her child in 2010, is the mother of a slain child, also our guest. And Randy Hopkins, the newly appointed deputy chief of the KCPD Bureau of Investigations, have been our guest today here on Central Standard. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can access Central Standard's archives, podcasts, special features, and a lot more on KCUR.org. Tune in tomorrow to let the food critics search for healthy and delicious spots to eat in Kansas City. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, executive produced by Bill Anderson. Kim Noble is our announcer behind the boards. Emily Mutard manages our website. Central Standard's intro theme music is by Miles Bonney. The outro is by The Will Knots. Up to Date is next with a look at the Academy Awards season. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day. We'll